Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Have you ever thought about what it would be like that moment in a critical situation, maybe in the hospital or another setting where you have to make a decision for a loved one or trying to figure out what your loved one's wishes were or would be in that critical moment and not sure what to do and leads to maybe difficult conversations in the family? We're going to talk about how you can hopefully avoid those difficult situations and talk about having conversations to prepare for that moment. You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for them in the sponsor section and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. Joining me in studio today, Mary Lazare, Vice President of Home and Community-Based Services for Lutheran Senior Services. Mary, welcome to Faith and Family.
Good morning, Andy. Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming over and spending some time in studio. Looking forward to learning about your work at Lutheran Senior Services. And the Reverend Michael Salamink, Executive Director of Lutherans for Life. Pastor Salamink, welcome to Faith and Family. Welcome back to Faith and Family.
Good morning. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be here again.
I hope everybody had a nice Labor Day weekend, all rested up, ready for a good conversation this morning. Mary, tell me a little bit about home and community-based services at Lutheran Senior Services.
Certainly happy to. Lutheran Senior Services proudly has a home and community-based services area that includes home health, and we offer home health, certified Medicare home health services in Missouri as well as in Illinois. We provide hospice care and services. We also provide private duty services to those who want to remain in a home-like setting with support. We provide outreach services, a variety of outreach services, and also have an aging answers line and a program of senior connections so that seniors do not have to age isolated and alone.
What have you, Mary, since you've been at LSS, how long have you been with LSS?
I have been with LSS since late November of 2014.
As you've been a part of Lutheran Senior Services, what have you learned about the community and the people that LSS serves?
Well, our mission is helping older adults live life to the fullest, and I can't think of an organization that better manifests that mission. Mm-hmm. In almost every meeting and encounter I have, it's always, well, will this help us further our mission? So that's always part of our conversation. I don't think there's anyone who works for LSS who can't tell you what is our mission. Everyone knows it. So it's certainly permeated, and being part of a faith-inspired organization, as our CEO refers to Lutheran Senior Services, it basically makes it inspiring to come to work every day and to feel that spirit. Whether you're in a budget meeting, mm-hmm. or you're in an operations and planning meeting, or you're encountering seniors and talking to them or providing care, it's evident, it's there, and it's a great way to start and end your day.
Mm. Our topic today, have you had the conversation, what every family needs to do? What sparked this topic for you and the folks at LSS to prepare this, as a presentation for those that you serve, for the older community and their families? What sparked this topic for you?
Well, it's an interesting question. I wasn't expecting it to come to us, but one day I got a phone call from a colleague at LSS who said she had been contacted by the School of Nursing at the University of Missouri, Columbia. They had received a grant from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, and that grant was to further the initiative called the Conversation Project in communities across the country. And that was not to do anything other than to bring out what is important to people, what is valued, what's important to them, not what's the matter with them, and wanted to know if Lutheran Senior Services wanted to be a part of this initiative herein when they brought the Conversation Project to St. Louis. So that's how we got involved. We said, yes, we definitely want to do that. With home and community-based services, it was a perfect fit, and as well, certainly those we serve, being seniors, we thought it was appropriate. But I want to go one more step, Andy, and that is that what was important, what hit us was the Conversation Project is not just a conversation for elderly. Mm-hmm. It's a conversation for all people. And it's, you know, basically adults, for all adults to think about this, what's important to you. Maybe nothing is the matter with you right now, but what are the things that you value? And to begin thinking about that for yourself, for elderly. And that's what was very interesting to me. It was not just about those in age closer to death than anyone else.
Pastor Salamink, what is the work of Lutherans for Life?
Well, we celebrate life in all of its states and all of its stages, and we do that in a variety of ways, whether that be through producing resources or helping congregations and communities have conversations, take action in their community, but most of all, empowering, enabling, inspiring people throughout the country, really, to celebrate the God's gift of life on account of the gospel of Jesus Christ, whether that life be at the very beginning or in the complicated middle stages or at the end, to celebrate and enjoy all of the blessings that God promises to those who trust in Jesus Christ as Savior.
The complicated middle stages. I like how you put that. We have a three-nager at home now.
There's some complications that come along with that, right?
Mary, how is, when we're talking about having conversations with family or talking about older adults and their needs so that they can live life to the fullest, how important is family in conversations? How important is it for there to be regular communication with family and interaction with family?
Well, it's vital. It's very important. The Conversation Project, per se, that initiative movement came out of the as a result of one person as a big initiator, and that person's name is Ellen Goodman. And Ellen is a Pulitzer Prize winner. And back in 2010, she and a group of colleagues got together because she had just experienced her mother's death. And she said, you know, my mother and I talked about everything except one thing, and that was, what was she like? What was important to her when she died? And that's what brought her to bring together colleagues, religious, a variety of people from a variety of careers and expertise in life. And they sat down and she said, let's have a conversation about good deaths and bad deaths. And it was mostly certainly around family who were involved in experiencing good death with another family member or a bad death. And that expanded actually to be loved ones. So there are some people certainly who age who are alone that don't have family. So let's expand the word family to those closest to us, the loved ones that we have, and how important it is for them to be a part of it. Because in the conversation about bad deaths, the conversation was around, I'm not sure I did the right thing. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of guilt that we didn't do the right thing. there's a lot of worry and a lot of bereaving that goes on after someone dies, of second guessing, was it the way mom would have wanted or dad would have wanted, or my sister or my brother, whomever. And that is why it's so important. As I mentioned earlier, it's not a conversation about what's the matter with you. It's what's important to you. Because the more your family and, let's say, loved ones know, the more your wishes and, as well, their bereavement are improved or enhanced, let's say. And I think that's just so important. It's interesting to see what, in the day, the experience I had with this initiative and movement, when we were sitting and discussing all of this, the stories around the room from people who had experienced this conversation, who said, I learned so much from my mother, from my sister, from my dad, that I felt more at peace And I felt I was helping them to honor and abide by their wishes. And that's important to people because they live on. Mm-hmm. And they as well want to do what's important to their loved one.
You bring up a good point that we have conversations all the time. But you know, if we have a healthy relationship with family members, with parents, it seems like we have conversations all the time. As you were talking about, this individual said, I talk to my mother about everything but this one thing. Why, Pastor Salamink, why do you think that is, that we're so reluctant to talk about end-of-life issues with family? We can talk about anything. We can talk about politics even sometimes in family, but we avoid talking about end-of-life issues.
Well, I think that Mary had alluded to the fact that there's it's an emotionally charged situation, mm-hmm. Because there are issues of unknown and separation. But more importantly, from a theological perspective, death is an enemy. It's not something that human beings are comfortable with, are at home with, because death is not a creation of God. It's a consequence of sin, and so naturally there's some holding at arm's length that comes to us that way of thinking about death. At least thinking about specifics and things like that doesn't come naturally even to Christians, and so we just rather avoid it, and that way we don't have to grapple.
Mm-hmm. Mary, anything you want to add to that? Why we just don't want to have those conversations?
I couldn't agree more with what Pastor just said as well. It's inevitable. It's a loss. I'm going to lose somebody mm-hmm. I love, and I don't want to face that. I don't want to talk about that. Let's not talk about that now. Later. Let's do that later. And that's what you often hear, especially when a parent brings it up mm-hmm. and says, you know, honey, let's talk about what Dad and I want. Mom, why do we don't need to talk about that now. You're fine. All is well.
I think we have some sort of reluctance because we think by talking about it, we might hasten it. We might bring it on sooner if we talk about it. Mm-hmm. Or we're just afraid. But I think sometimes we think that it'll make it happen sooner if we start talking about it.
Well, there's also there's a lack of cultural preparation. Our culture doesn't prepare us very well to talk and think about death, which is not to say that the culture doesn't talk about death or think about death, just doesn't do it very well. And you know, over many years of pastoral ministry, I've had this experience conducting funerals and seeing the way that people address or go through these situations, and there's a lot of confusion as to how am I supposed to mark these situations, and to the point where some things take place that are almost comical because people are let's say illiterate when it comes to thinking about not just how am I dying, but more how are the people around me that I care about dying. And I think that we naturally approach that even more awkwardly than our own death. When it's me dying, I still have some control over the situation. And perhaps the most frightening thing about death is that the lack of control. And so when it is somebody that we love, that lack of control is almost complete. And it's very difficult to walk with mm-hmm. somebody through that, especially when there's nothing that I can do.
So it makes all the more sense then that what we're talking about today, having this conversation, having conversations in advance, that gives you more control, if you will, over, you know, your input is more considered in this in end of life issues if you have those conversations. Mm-hmm. So it's more empowering.
You know, Andy, it's interesting. One of the things that I learned as I delved more and more into this conversation, mm-hmm. shall we say, is that the town of La Crosse, Wisconsin, and this will be interesting for listeners to check this out, NPR has a segment that you can listen to online, and it's called The Town Where Everyone Talks About Death. And so national statistics are that if you think across the nation, about 30% of people have actually had this conversation we're talking about today. So that's pretty good numbers, not great. But in La Crosse, Wisconsin, if you go 18 years and older, about 96% of people have had the conversation. And you wonder, why in the heck? Well, how did that happen?
Yeah.
There was an ethicist in one of the hospitals in La Crosse who had spent years of experiencing in intensive care units with very snap decisions, emotionally charged decisions, people having to make decisions about loved ones. And speaking exactly to the example that Pastor just mentioned, and that is, maybe I'm at a point where I can't take control and make those decisions. So loved ones and family members are making that decision for me, and they're faced with it by perhaps a physician in the intensive care unit saying, I need you to make a decision, you know, and that's rough. So in La Crosse, this ethicist said, we've got to start doing something about changing the culture that you just mentioned, Pastor. And so they began a community-wide initiative around similar to what we're saying, the Conversation Project, but their initiative reached out across the community through religious organizations, healthcare organizations, businesses, universities, and involved lots and lots of people. So it's a conversation. You could walk into a restaurant, they say, in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and people are sitting around saying, well, have you had that? Have you planned? Have you had that conversation with your family members? And I listened to interviews of newlyweds talking to each other about, well, now that we're a family, we're, you know, we need to have that conversation. The interview that you can hear online is one where this lady from NPR is knocking on the door of a couple's home and saying, I just met your neighbors across the street, and they say you haven't had the conversation. So it's kind of the gossip in town, who has and who has not had the conversation. What's interesting is that more people, they find, choose when they can. If you were going to just keep doing interventions and doing things that will extend my life but not necessarily change my life, I don't know if I want those. And it's just, it's interesting that you find 96% of adults have had that conversation and make it easier for their loved ones to be a part of a death that's not, I guess, as challenging or a bad death as others have described.
That it's certainly going to be an emotional process no matter what. So what can we do prior to that to help, as you said earlier, make that easier on our loved ones? How do we begin? Where do we begin? You mentioned, you know, in this town, it was La Crosse, Wisconsin. Is that right?
Right. It started
with a community-wide initiative to start having conversations. How do we begin? Where do you begin as, you know, where would I begin as an individual to start that conversation? Now, my son's a little young, so I don't know if I'd have that conversation right now with him, but, you know, in the future, how do you begin that conversation with loved ones, particularly adult children of older adults?
Well, let me mention there are a couple of resources online that I would refer people to, and one of them is you can go online and Google The Conversation Project, and there's a wealth of resources on this website that address a variety of things. There are a couple of what they call starter kits. One is a starter kit for just having the conversation with family loved ones. There's a kit even for a starter kit for those with dementia and Alzheimer's, because that often is an extended years process. And there's a starter kit for involving the person who has dementia or Alzheimer's and family to sit and discuss as things progress. There's even a pediatric kit of how do we have conversations with children who may be faced with a terminal illness, and how does the family deal with that? But that's at least just something to look at. So I would say to you, Andy, it's something to just look at and begin thinking about. It's not like, oh, you have to open the starter kit, think about it, and make decisions tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's not it. It's something where you begin having conversations and reach out to, I would say, to yourself. Reach out to yourself first and begin looking at some of the questions. And we can talk about some of those things, but as well, it's notes to self.
Mm-hmm.
Making notes to yourself, thinking about that. How do I feel about my answers? Maybe we take a while to get comfortable with my decisions. And then some people even write letters to their families, not necessarily to send, but just how would I share this conversation with my family or loved ones? Having the there's even a starter kit, how to have the conversation with your physician. But as well, I think a lot of people want to stop and think about these decisions in light of their faith and religious values, and having a conversation with those mm-hmm. in, you know, religious experts that they can speak with also makes a big difference.
Certainly. Certainly. Michael, are there resources from Lutherans for Life to help us with these conversations?
I think that the conversations, as Mary is saying, we want those conversations to begin well before the moment or the mm-hmm. situation. For Christians, that conversation about death is a lifelong one that begins at the moment of baptism. Do you not know that all of us who were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into His death? So we begin that conversation, and the local congregation provides the best resource for having those conversations. First of all, pastors and teachers can take advantage of opportunities that they are given in church services or Sunday school classes or Bible studies. Then they can also take advantage of teachable moments when there are cultural occurrences or local community events or topics that come up that offer an opportunity to address issues about how can we confess Christ in the context of suffering and dying. That also includes parents, even with small children. It's for Christians, it's not inappropriate to talk to small children about death from the moment that they can understand the English language. And even before, mm-hmm. for many of us, we're telling them how Jesus died and rose again to save them for eternal life. And so that conversation really, for Christians, comes very naturally to us, certainly in age-appropriate ways, but it's ongoing. And the congregation, in the congregation's life, there are plenty of opportunities to become not just educated, but engaged in having a front row seat to what God is doing, even in the context of a person dying. We think of, for example, funerals in the congregation. Certainly, if we've ever gotten the perception that funerals are exclusively for the family and close friends of the deceased, then we've missed the point. Congregationally, a funeral is for the whole community to come together and grieve the loss of a person's company, but also celebrate the hope of resurrection. Folks in the congregation who are suffering, who are in situations that may end in death, or folks who are elderly in care facilities, to be able to visit and interact with them as they are dying. And that's the thing. Death never happens in the abstract. It's always a person who is dying. And so if we can continually engage and reach out to and walk with and care for people in those situations, we're going to be better prepared when it gets closer to us. So I think that it starts with the congregational level and taking advantage of the local congregation as a resource for more than just hearing the word of the Lord and receiving his sacraments, but also for that life together that God gives us as mm-hmm. the community that is the family of Christ.
So what I think I hear you saying is that when we talk about death, the death doesn't have to be the whole of the conversation, but rather, what does life mean, and how are we, and this is lifelong teaching on what God says about life and how life is valued and important. Yes, there's, as you pointed out earlier, there's a consequence to sin, and that is death, and that is imminent. That will happen, but the focus of the conversation is really on what does Christ say about life, and what does that mean for this person now who's now facing death?
Especially in the context of death. It's important for us to remember as Christians that a person who is dying is still living, mm-hmm. right? And so we're not necessarily engaging death, but as you say, we are learning to see God's gift of life in ways and forms that we might not otherwise be conversant with, but our Savior Jesus Christ, by rising from the dead, has redeemed every situation of human existence. That means mm-hmm. he has redeemed suffering and dying too. And so we can enter into those situations with the people who are in our Christian family, who are in the communion of saints, and engage that from the perspective of what is God offering? What is God mm-hmm. giving in this situation, a blessing that I can celebrate with these people?
You know, we encourage people to talk about how I want to live, as you just mentioned, how I want to live the end of my life. So rather than saying, here is how I would like to die, is what you just mentioned, Pastor. Remember, we are still living, and mm-hmm. that is the way to approach that conversation is, I'd like to talk about how I would like to live the end of my life. And I think what you just said is so important for people to
sure.
embrace.
That the focus here is on life rather than death. And I think what I also heard is that if we can make a cultural change in how we talk about life and death very early on in the home and in the congregation, so that we are willing to have these conversations throughout life and use teachable moments throughout life, especially as children are growing and learning, not passing on this fear of talking about it that we've done so well as a culture, but rather focus on teaching about life from early childhood on, then we won't be afraid of having this conversation because we've made this change in our home and in our congregation.
Well, we'll want to be clear, mm-hmm. As Simul Iustis et Peccator, always simultaneously saint and sinner, the conversation, even if we are able to cast it in the most positive gospel-oriented terms, the conversation about living the end of life is never going to be easy. It's never going to be comfortable. I like Mary's language of good or bad. We can have conversation about how to live in Christ that includes dying and rising with Christ in such a way that it is a good conversation, not only for ourselves, but for those around us. But it's never going to be easy. It's never going to be comfortable. There's nothing we can do that's ever going to entirely eliminate the fear ultimately that drives us into God's arms.
We're going to talk about how to get into that conversation a little bit more here in just a little bit. We need to take a quick break. We're talking with Mary Lazare from Lutheran Senior Services, Vice President of Home and Community-Based Services there, and the Reverend Michael Salamink, Executive Director of Lutherans for Life, talking about how to have that conversation. Have you had that conversation? If not, stick around. Learn something here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin, in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
What do you think America's leaders and political candidates would do if a foreign country nuked over 90 of our nation's largest cities and killed everyone in them? I'm talking about New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, or Boston. Would every member of the clergy be speaking out in their pulpits? How about every social media and internet outlet? What about every media entity? Would you expect them to take immediate action to stop the killing in whatever way they could? Well, that's the total number of lives killed so far by legal abortion. Abortion has stopped the beating hearts of enough humans to fill 94 of America's largest cities. Where's the outcry? The silence is deadly. Please share this news with everyone and ask them to speak out now.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Each day, we at LCEF are energized by you, the members of the LCMS. People's lives are transformed by the gospel, and the world can witness that change through your actions. LCEF is blessed to share in these experiences as people like you invest so that loans and critical services are available for ministries and church leaders. We're encouraged by you and your action and inspired to be there for you. Check out lcef.org.
Join Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and thousands of congregations across the country as they observe Refugee Sunday, a time to celebrate the gifts migrants and refugees bring to the United States. Pick a Sunday that works best for your congregation to celebrate. New resource kits, including bulletin insert and poster, will be available soon. Sign up for our newsletter at lirs.org/rebuildinghope.
Liturgical art is a beautiful expression of Christ's great love for us. I'm Kelly Schumacher, founder of Agnus Dei Arts, and I would like to help you learn about liturgical art and the beauty it portrays as you view it through paintings, drawings, sculptures, and altarpieces. I'm available to speak with your group. My website is agnusdeiarts.com, agnusdeiarts.com.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are talking about having the conversation, to avoid that that difficult moment in the hospital or ICU, other places where that critical conversation can happen. Talking about having that conversation prior to that, our guest today, Mary Lazare from Lutheran Senior Services and the Reverend Michael Salamink of Lutherans for Life. Before we went to break, we were talking about when to begin that conversation, and Pastor Salamink brought up a good point that really lifelong conversations are good through, you know, starting in early childhood, talking about life with children, so that later in life we really truly understand what is life, what we confess about life, and end of life issues as well. Mary, if we haven't had those lifelong conversations, haven't really had a cultural change, and we still face this fear of having a conversation in the family, what were some things you learned in the Conversation Project of beginning that conversation? Some first steps. You mentioned looking for resources that we could certainly use for starting that conversation. Other things that might help us start that conversation in our families.
Well, there's another site that I'm going to say is another resource. And I think when I tell you the name of this site, you'll go, oh, wow, that's pretty strong. And this resource website is called Death Over Dinner. And it's a more of a cultural shocker at first for those of us who are not accustomed to having this conversation. But check the website out because, again, to answer your question, Andy, how do we start this? It's okay, start looking at things, start thinking about things. And on this website, when you pull it up, it'll say death over dinner. And the premise of this is that you or your parents or someone has planned, I want to talk about, and I don't want to use the word death over dinner, but how I want to live the end of my life.
Sure.
And you invite people to the kitchen table versus a physician inviting people to the table in the intensive care unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it's reinforcing, have the conversation maybe slowly, gently. On that website, there are just questions that you can begin thinking about. And on the Conversation Project website, there are questions. And I'll share a couple of those just to give people an idea of, it's a gentle way to begin thinking about this. Some of the questions would be, as a patient, I would like to know, and then on a scale of 1 to 5, only the basics, or number 5, all the details. So you look at that and you begin answering those questions to yourself. Would I want to know only the basics, or would I want to know all the details about what's going on with me, so that I can begin or be involved in making those decisions about how I want to live at the end of my life? Some of the other questions are, as doctors treat me, I would like the doctor to do the best that they think is what's best for me, or do I want to have a say in all of what happens to me? So again, another question about how you want to live. If I had a terminal illness, I prefer to, on a scale starting at 1, not know how quickly things may progress, or I want to know my doctor's their best estimate of how long I have to live. So again, it's getting an idea of what's important to you and how much do you want to be involved. So they raise some of these questions, again, as I mentioned earlier, just for you to start thinking about these things. It's not a snap decision. And I think you mentioned before, Pastor, teachable moments. And that's often a way to begin that conversation. You know, my neighbor just passed away, or my neighbor is terminally ill, and she and her daughter have not talked about it, and she mentioned to me, I don't know how to have that conversation with my daughter. Mom, maybe you and I should have that conversation. I don't want to be in the same situation that they are in. So I think those teachable moments may be one way to get the conversation started, or you've taken the time to address some questions, and you slowly introduce it, perhaps to your children or to your parents. And it may be, it's not just about my life, but Mom, Dad, I know we haven't had the conversation, but it's important for us to make good decisions for you if you can't make them. And then you go from there. I don't think we force it. We just open the door for people to either talk to us or we speak to them about how you want to live.
You talked about death over dinner, kind of there's some punch value to the,
right.
the name there. To bring it to the congregational level, as Pastor Salamik was talking about earlier, the importance of doing that at a congregational level. I've heard of a congregation that had a death and taxes night. It was a fellowship night, but with the intent of teaching addressing those very questions
good.
Of, you know, how do I address the very questions, but bringing it to a congregational level so that kind of opens up the door more to families having conversations as well as members having conversations with their pastor about what their wishes are as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's a fantastic idea that gives a great opportunity for the pastor to lead congregation and give some instruction about, how does the Christian faith guide us in thinking about these issues? And then for loved ones to be able to discuss those things with each other. There are a host of soft entries into that conversation. two that I like to recommend with folks. One has to do with just asking questions about health history. Become acquainted with your parents' health history if you're not already. The health history can affect you. It can affect your children. And so it's kind of a shared family information, but that also gives you and your parents a chance to talk about or anticipate what you might be facing in the future. What health concerns or issues have parents had and what complications might arise from those things. Secondly, just genealogical questions, you know, asking how did great grandma die, what do you remember about that situation? What conditions maybe was she afflicted with, and that can open up a conversation, you know, to talk with mom and dad about would you do it the same way, or I don't know that I would approach it that way. I might do this sort of thing differently. Then it becomes a very natural, organic conversation where it's building relationship, not just gaining information.
I think the more difficult question is, what do you serve for dinner at a conversation like that?
Jell-O. Just very bright, cheerful.
There you go. That's bright and cheerful.
Jell-O salad.
That's right.
But you raise another good point, Pastor, in terms of, you know, involving people, your loved ones, in the conversation. And that's one of the other questions they talk about is, how much would you want your family to know about your health history and what's going on with you now? Mm-hmm. It could be from on a scale of 1 to 5, I don't want them to know my health history, or you can share all the details about what's going on with me, with my family, especially where you mentioned knowing your health history sometimes helps them understand how much they've already been through, how what they've already encountered may impact any decisions they make for sustaining or doing more interventions. And it's important to also talk about, where do you want to be? I mean, some of these conversations, it's what's important to you? Being outside, being by a window. I want to see water. I want to have chocolate ice cream. Sometimes those little things
you
are
read my notes,
so,
didn't you?
Oh, I didn't mean to share that with everybody. But those kinds of things are important. That is how I want to live. And it also makes the conversation palatable in terms of, here's where I want to be. Mm-hmm. Here's what's important to me. And as well, do you want people surrounding you? Do you want friends coming to and from? If you can't make those decisions, what will be important to you? And I think that all of that conversation around colorful Jell-O certainly adds to the vibrancy of the emotions going on in the room.
Sure. How do you want to live the end of your life?
And I appreciate Mary bringing the expertise of addressing the stuff that we might not think of that seem like minor details, but when you go through those situations, they can make all of the difference. Are you the type of person that really wants to be at home, or would you rather be in a facility where there's dedicated professionals who can be with you 24 hours a day? Does that make you more comfortable? You know, what are your favorite movies, or what do you like to do to pass time? Mm-hmm. Things like that, so that it makes a person feel more comfortable, more confident in addressing some of the bigger questions, like what treatment options are even available. Mm-hmm. It's good to know, you know, one of the reasons that I brought up health history is that then we can have anticipatory conversations about the types of complications that might develop and what treatment strategies or measures are available for those, and what of those are you comfortable with, and what of those are you less comfortable with, and more importantly, how can the way that we walk through this together, even with medical professionals and procedures, how can this reflect your Christian faith and identity? How can we look at this as an opportunity to like I said before, enjoy a blessing from God. Confess Christ.
Mary, if we're talking about this, do we need to do more than talk? Does this need to be documented as well in some way?
You know, you raise a great question, and that's one of the points I wanted to make sure to get out to the listeners, and that is one of the other questions you'll see with the Conversation Project is it deals with, say you have advanced directives or a living will and you've made some decisions and you've put them in writing. When you have a conversation, I think another great aspect or facet to that conversation would be how comfortable would your family members be in keeping true to your advanced directives? So if you say, I don't want any extraordinary measures taken, even if, whatever, but your family members, your loved ones are the ones who have to make those decisions. You can eat the one of the questions they ask you is, how important is it for your loved ones to follow your directives? One, on a scale of one, follow it to the T, or go to five, and the answer, I want them to do what makes them comfortable. So the question that's good to have with family is, what's important to me is maybe you honor some of my wishes to the best of your ability because you live on beyond me and I don't want you suffering later. And so some people have even talked about writing a letter, a note, and I read one of these notes and it was basically, whatever you have decided, we have discussed, and I appreciate that you took the time to talk with me. And I love you, I'll watch over you, and I'll always be with you, no matter what you decide. Don't feel guilty, don't feel bad about whatever decision you might make. I know that you make it in love for me. So yes, it's important to put things out there and have a conversation. But I also think it's important for us to remember somebody has to make that difficult decision. And can we talk about how you will feel and what I will think if you don't honor every single thing mm-hmm. I've put in writing?
And that's vitally important. And I really think that raises an important emphasis a person who is going through dying and the people who support them and in some cases advocate for them and act on their behalf, be on a team, feel like that we're pulling in the same direction. And having this conversation helps us talk through those things. So maybe in our initial conversations, we might not see eye to eye on specific measures or priorities, but that gives us a chance to continue to talk through those mm-hmm. things before the moment arrives when time might force one or both of us to make a decision that, that we might second guess later on. You know, Lutherans for Life regularly counsels people that there are multiple kinds of advanced directives, and some of them, Mary, using your scale, some of them are more of the one variety, the level one variety, where here's exactly what I want to happen and not happen, mm-hmm. and some of them are more of the level five variety, where I really want so-and-so to be my advocate and to represent my priorities, but to be the decision-making agent and mm-hmm. to do so with their best judgment. I think it's very important to be educated about those different types of advanced directives and also to be educated about the legal force of advanced directives. It certainly is not the case that just because I write something down on a piece of paper and it's made official by my attorney that it's binding on everybody in every situation. And I think that comes as a surprise to some people, that sometimes, there are state regulations that give medical professionals and medical institutions some leeway to use their best judgment in those situations. And so becoming informed about, how advanced directives function in your state or in your community is an important part when you're sitting down to talk about drawing up these documents that we might use To help confess Christ at the end of life.
Sounds like another whole program right there. Learning about advanced directives and how to make sure that they're used to their best, you know, to that they work for you and do what you want them to do. Yeah, that's certainly important. We have just about 3 minutes left. I want to make sure that we get to all the topics that you wanted to include today, Mary, and you as well, Pastor, that other topics that you address. I know you share this topic as well in settings, in presentations and in some of the retreats as well for LSS.
Yes.
Other topics that have come up in this presentation that you want us to get to today before we wrap up?
You know, it's interesting you asked that at the Lutheran Older Adult Retreat that was held at Pere Marquette, I believe back in the fall. I'm not sure when that was. Maybe it was actually spring. Time flies when you're having
fun. Well, it rotates. One year it's in the fall and one year it's in the spring.
I think it was the spring this year, actually. But we had this same topic. I had the same topic with a group. And from the audience, that group that was sitting there, what was important is you ask about written documentation. They actually said to me, it's also important for some of them who have had the conversation with family. It's also important to talk about wills, trusts, passwords, insurance policies, all of those businessy type of financial, mm-hmm. personal details, because they said, I've witnessed this with friends where for months or more than a year, families struggle with closing all of the estate and finding things that no one shared because they never had this conversation. So it's not only about these issues we've talked about today, but it's also those personal and financial things that help your loved ones live on beyond our death and, you know, close the estates and so forth with a little more ease and comfort. So something I learned from the audience. Mm-hmm.
Certainly valuable. With just about a minute left, Pastor Salamink.
I want to echo what Mary said. It's absolutely essential, especially for pastors as people who are going to be spiritual guides, spiritual resources for families as they go through these situations. Pastors need to be absolute experts on all of those matters so that they can help. They can be an objective handholder while those who are grieving go through those situations. But I think most importantly, I want to go back to Mary's language of good death and bad death, because I think that really captures the heart of the conversation. And for us as Christians, we get to remember that a good death is not necessarily one in which there is no suffering, nor is a bad death a one in which there is no joy. That because our Savior Jesus Christ has gone with us into death and has passed through, gives us the hope of everlasting life and a happy reunion in heaven, that a good death is one in which we walk through it with God's word and God's promises, and He promises to lead us in those situations. And so that becomes our most important resource. And no death that takes place with Christ walking beside us is ever a bad death, no matter how much suffering there is.
Indeed. Mary Lazare, Vice President, Home and Community-Based Services, Lutheran Senior Services, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate it.
The Reverend Michael Salamink, Executive Director, Lutherans for Life, thanks so much for being my guest today.
It's my joy again.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.